Theory, the first of 2024. We wrapped it up last week with Taylor McLeod. He's out today, but we got Nate Sperlin of the Cap Podcast, who is anxiously awaiting his first album of 2024. And back again, Anthony Vasquez, who fittingly is here to talk about his two favorite teams, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and we're going to get to the Ravens later, who wrapped up the one seed as the NFL playoffs loom. But let's start with this great game, one of the best games of the season so far between the Celtics and Thunder, the two top teams in the power rankings coming into this game, two of the best records in the league as well, and just two games apart now, 2.5 games here after the Thunder beat the Celtics at home pretty convincingly, Vasquez. We kicked it around that morning. You were surprised that the Thunder weren't favored. The Celtics, on our official sports wagering partner here, FanDuel, were 4-point favorites. And it was the Thunder who set the tone early, won the first quarter, got their lead up to 18 early in the fourth. And their pace, just like last year when these two teams played, Thunder obviously in a much different place a year ago, but even that group last year, without Shea in that game, ran the Celtics off the court and scored 150 in this game, 127. Big shots from Shea throughout. Great check game as well. Jalen Williams was really good here. And the Thunder showed, it wasn't a national game, but a lot of people tuned into this one given where these two teams were. And I think this was a real coming out party for the Thunder, you know, proving grounds here to show everybody that they're for real.
Absolutely, Bobby. I hope that, you know, people begin to take the Thunder serious now. And it's hard to do so because they're the second youngest roster in the league right now at about 23.5 years old. But we're talking about prime performers across the lineup. Like you mentioned, we got Shea, who dropped, I think, 36 that game or something like that. And then obviously Chet with another masterclass. It seems like he's leading the rookie of the year discussion and is not even close, with all due respect, to Victor Wembanyama. It'll be interesting to see if they're able to translate this into the postseason, which we have yet to see them in.
And we did over-unders, Nate, before the year. I'm interested to see what we said about the Thunder because they came in on FanDuel at 44.5, and we all went over. So we were all pretty high on this team coming in. I remember talking to Vasquez and, you know, all of you guys in the chat, in our group chat edition of the show here, and saying, you know, I want to pick the Thunder for home court. I don't know if I should because they're still so young, as Vasquez mentioned. And, you know, you're going to have your ups and downs, Chet's first year. So I didn't feel great about it, especially with how good the West is. But I wish I jumped in all the way on them because they have the pieces here. Shea's an MVP candidate. Chet, he was a very popular pick to, you know, be in that rookie of the year race coming in alongside Wembanyama because of the year off he had here. Good coach, a really good defensive team a year ago, and one that, you know, punched up quite often on their way to the play-in tournament. So you knew guys were going to take a leap. You knew they got a good pick in Jalen Williams here. But there was just a little too much uncertainty for me to jump all the way in and say they were going to be a home court team. But now that's looking obvious, Nate.
Yeah. I kind of have to disagree with Vasquez a little bit about taking them seriously. No disrespect
seriously,
to the talent.
Seriously, in what sense?
Seriously for contending in as a championship team. Just because they're just so young. Like Vasquez said, they're the second youngest team in the roster in the league. Excuse me. They have the second youngest roster in the league. And because of that, we usually see these young teams get into the playoffs and then end up being way in over their heads. And I suspect that this is going to happen for them as well. I think that they're a really good team. But again, the youth in playoffs, the amount of time that it takes, the amount of experience that it takes for you to win in the playoffs, the Thunder just don't have that yet. I think they will get it in this year and coming years after. But for this year to say that they're a championship contender, I'm kind of like, we have to press the brakes a little bit.
Well, it's going to be an interesting thing, Vasquez, is they haven't been there yet. They got that play-in experience, and I was kind of surprised they bowed out of that. But that's not quite the same as a full series, especially in the West where you're going up against, you know, right now it would technically be Dallas, but it could be anyone from New Orleans to the Lakers to Houston to some of those teams in the middle there if they do fall a little bit, like a Sacramento. So there's really no opponent in the West, even if they do finish as a top 2-3 seed, that you say you're going to roll through out there just because of how deep the conference is.
Absolutely true. But I do want to give credit to the Chesapeake Arena, well, now the Paycom Center. When the playoffs come, they're notably one of the loudest arenas in the league.
And they'll be excited to be back.
We saw it during the Russ and PG days. It's a loud house. So I think that'll be a benefit to them. And I think realistically, the only matchup that I would be concerned about for them is maybe a Sacramento. Just because they have a high-paced offense as well. Shout out to Mike Brown. But a lot of these other teams just seem to either be woefully unprepared or just on the older side. For example, the Lakers, health is always going to be an issue for them. If they're not in these playoffs healthy, there's no way that they're going to win.
Yeah.
I got faith in my Thunder. That's just bias.
And they've slid quite a bit since the in-season tournament here. And that's the thing, too, for the Thunder. It's not early anymore. I said this on the Garn Report tonight. Some of the teams like Houston, like Indiana, they've regressed a little bit, Nate, but this team's still up there. And you're seeing them go in an even higher direction right now in terms of knocking off the Nuggets, knocking off the Celtics here. They've played some of the best teams in the league, including Minnesota, in recent weeks here. And they built a 5-game winning streak around that schedule, getting tougher. And now it's going to really soften out. I think the Hawks are coming up, Vasquez and the Nets and Wizards and teams like that. So they could extend this run winning streak here in the short term. And then over the long term, you know, who knows how it's going to shake out at the top of the conference. But the important thing to me is that they're going to solidify themselves above that play-in line. And that at least guarantees you a full playoff series.
Agreed. I think they're definitely a playoff team without the play-in. When you're just looking at that starting five, you have Shea, you have Giddy, you have Holmgren, you have, I believe, is that Jay Will or J-Dub Vasquez?
J-Dub.
That's J-Dub. Okay, you have J-Dub, yeah. And you also have Lugansdort. Lugansdort, I've just been a fan of his for ever since he's really been in the league. Like, we call it the Dortcher Tamer for a reason. You do not want to be there.
And he's played a playoff series.
Yeah, he has played a playoff. And he locked up James Harden. Like, the only time I've seen, like, someone, like, actually lock up James Harden without, like, James Harden, like, just, like, fumbling or whatever. Like, that's, like, the only time I've seen that. So, they do have the squad. Chet Holmgren has been really impressive. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, as you said, is a MVP contender. But, again, I think it just comes down to youth. And that's just something that they have, unfortunately. And because of that, they don't have the experience. And I think that maybe in 2 years, we can start taking them seriously as a championship team. But they need that experience first before we can start really expecting them to be lifting any trophies anytime soon.
In response to that, if I may ask, Bobby, I know this came up in conversation in the chat a while back. Are there any veteran moves that you guys envision them being able to make with the deadline fast approaching next month?
I think you have to. And it's interesting because they have all these picks into the future. Some of them are valuable when you think of where the Clippers are at. They, you know, could be more of a short-term window for them. I think you try to be aggressive if you're them. And that doesn't mean go out and get a star. Everyone's debating right now, Vasquez, should they go get a star? I don't know what star is out there. It's certainly not LaVine, as Nate would say. He's not going to come in here.
LaVine is going to tank your season.
So that's not it. You know, Pascal Siakam, I guess, is going to be out there. I don't think he's a fit here, just too expensive. I think you go out and get a veteran, certainly. Yeah, I think this team is overdue in adding one. They're just such a young team, as you mentioned there. They do have the MVP candidate in Shea, who's gaining more experience, but still on the younger side here. I think you try to look for someone who's played in the playoffs, who can either come off the bench or make spot starts if there's an injury or something like that. And I was talking to Brandon Rabar, who covers them out in Oklahoma, and you know, he threw out two names that I thought were really good. And Kelly Olynyk, who you have to think is going to move this year because he's an expiring contract on a pretty bad Utah team. And Isaiah Stewart, who's on the worst team ever.
Isaiah Stewart doesn't help at all. He's
a big body. So if I was going to throw out a position there, Vasquez, it's center. You know, Chet's been awesome, but there's not really any depth behind him. I know Jalen Williams with the J-A-Y is, you know, filling some minutes
That's Jay Will.
Yeah, so I don't think that's a reliable option if Chet gets banged up or if he gets up in foul trouble or something like that. I'd love to see a guy like Olynyk on this team who can shoot threes, who can ball handle, who can defend reliably in a team concept. He'd be a really good fit here. And if you remember, he went to the East Finals with the Celtics back in the day on that Isaiah team.
Yeah, he definitely has. I mean, Olynyk would be a very solid add. As you mentioned, it takes a lot of the pressure off of Chet as well when it comes to banging with these burly bigs late in the season, you know, that causes injuries, and he's just not big enough yet to sustain that. I don't know, though. I feel like I don't want to necessarily mess up the chemistry too much. I think Alex Caruso would actually be a very,
that'd
very
be a
good
bold one if you really want to go all in.
I definitely agree. I think him being a bench player who's still a lockdown defender, one of the preeminent defenders in this league, it could definitely boost our rating from third to first. Because we have enough scoring already. That's not the issue. It's just a matter of winning those close games and making those smart plays. And from his Laker days, we knew Caruso as a high IQ player, and I'm sure he'd be immensely valuable. It's just a matter of what the market looks like for him, because we're expecting, what, 2 first-round picks at minimum for him?
I think so.
Is that worth it?
I mean, I think you need – Caruso is a name, out of all the names that we've said so far, I like the most, because he's won a championship and he has that championship pedigree. I don't hate Kelly Olynyk at all on this team either, because he has playoff experience. Isaiah Stewart, what are we doing? Like, what? Genuinely, what are we doing?
He's
like,
shooting 37% from three this
it
year.
It does. He hasn't even played has he even dribbled had a single dribble in the playoffs? I don't think he has.
He's young.
So that doesn't help the situation at all. I think potentially they could go out and maybe sign a veteran from free agency. Maybe look at a Dwight Howard. Maybe look at a DeMarcus Cousins, someone who has experience in the playoffs.
They're gonna go out to Taiwan.
Because when you think about it, what if they have to get Caruso? They have to give up. They have the picks, but they might have to give up a player too, and that messes up chemistry. Signing Dwight Howard is free. You just add him to the roster, and his veteran experience is just helpful throughout the whole organization. And I think that's really kind of what they should be looking for instead, versus like actually adding someone who needs like 20 minutes of playing time every game.
Those guys have been out of the league for a little bit, but I don't hate the idea of doing something like that. And you know what name does pop into my head, Vasquez, in that sense, if he wants to join this team late and ramp up for the playoffs, is our old friend in Boston here, Blake Griffin, who's hasn't signed with the team to start this year. Oklahoma ties, of course, you know, that being his, you know, home state. That could be a fun finish for his career, playing with those young guys into the playoffs and, you know, trying to make a push there. I don't know what his plans are. He certainly isn't a, you know, every night guy at this point, but when the Celtics really need him to step in, he did a decent job last year, and he was just an invaluable resource for the locker room, if that is what you're looking for, just in terms of a veteran being there. So I think you do both of those things, right? You go out and maybe add a buyout guy, a veteran who's just going to cost you nothing. And then you try to make an impact rotation addition to this team, because I don't know, what would you say their biggest weakness is, Vasquez, right now, if you had to point it out? Is it big depth? Is it their bench? Do they need a guard like Caruso? Like, what does this team need?
Honestly, considering that they're top five both in offense and defense, and they're the second youngest team in the league, I would say the only issue that they have is youth. Hence why a lot of the moves that we need have to involve veteran experience and getting that pedigree, so to speak, into the locker room and the character.
And they have the picks. They have
potentially PJ Tucker. I wonder. I imagine that he's pretty cheap.
He's an amazing addition to this lineup. He brings a certain level of toughness and metal. I think one thing that we do need, now that you mentioned it, is an enforcer.
Yeah.
We need somebody who's really going to be
PJ
the James
Tucker
Johnson.
Is an enforcer.
Absolutely. And I think he gives the team a little bit of toughness and an edge.
So is Isaiah Stewart, though. I think you need a guy who can actually play.
Vasquez, I'm going to tell you straight up, I think Bobby's trying to tank your season. I think Bobby saw this Boston game and saw Oklahoma City beat Boston, and now he's like, what can I do to make sure that they never meet in the finals? I think that's what's happening.
The agenda has begun early, I see.
I would love this as a finals. And I've never been to Oklahoma City, so I'm intrigued to see what it's like if that does end up happening. It certainly is in LA or something like that in terms of destinations out west, but I'd be interested in checking it out. I read a book about it. It seems like a cool place. But
it's very quiet, but it's listen, if you're just going for the basketball, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
But I mean, this team has been the team of the year so far. I'm sorry. I mean, compared to last year, when the beginning expectations were Wemby watch, to now being a top 2 seed in the West with like one of the brightest futures out there, they they grew quickly. I'll tell you that much. Preston was right, huh?
Even if the time isn't now, you think of a Cason Wallace developing, you think of another first-round pick coming in, and that's where it's going to get challenging, is where do you get all these guys' minutes and touches and all that. You're going to have to balance that against actually just tightening out and consolidating this roster. But they're in a really good spot no matter what direction they choose. They have these guys for a long time, so they could play the patient route, or they could try to take advantage of what they're doing right now this year. And, you know, before we move on here, we got to mention Shea and just what he did in this game. Blowing by Derek White and Jrue Holiday repeatedly. Big shots throughout. Tatum gave him some issues late, Vasquez, you know, when they switched him onto him, which was a great move by the Celtics as they almost came back late. But he outplayed Tatum, who's, you know, Tatum was pretty good in this game too. You're probably tossing up each of those guys equally in terms of an MVP race right now. I know Embiid and Jokic and others are up at the front of the line, but in that next tier are guys like Tatum and Shea. And Shea was a little bit better in this game just in terms of being able to break down a variety of defenders, score 7 assists. Tatum had 8 assists in this game too, which was pretty impressive. I mean, these guys were just going mano a mano there, which was so fun to watch. And, you know, Brian Scalabrine, you guys, you know, you've heard my complaints there. But the one thing I do love that he said there in this game, you know, he got asked, who does this guy remind you of, Shea? And he said, a bigger Tony Parker, just in terms of all the moves he's able to do inside the park, the finishing ability, the mid-range game. And I can see that. But there's also some Jimmy Butler there too. And that's what makes me dream a little bit that if he really gets going in the playoffs, he could be the best player in any given series, except that Nuggets one, Nate, where it's going to be Jokic, of course, as a favorite there. But they've knocked off the Nuggets too. They've knocked off the Nuggets twice here so far, so who knows?
They have, and one of those times was in Denver.
Yes. So you believe in them going the distance, Vasquez, or is this year just going to be about experience in the playoffs and kind of getting their feet wet?
I'll answer it this way. Do I expect them in the finals this year? No. Would I be surprised if they pulled off a Cinderella run? No, I would not be surprised either. I think in the West, their only competition right now is Denver because of that man in the middle in Jokic and that offense of snipers. But I think the Thunder will make it competitive enough. If Shea is the Jimmy Butler that you say he could be, we'll be in the finals before long.
All right, so we'll leave that one there. We'll talk about the Celtics another day. We do that enough, but good effort in this game coming back. I don't think this was a horrible loss. You don't want to go down by 18 to start the fourth like they did, but this is a good team they went up against, a good test, and only their 7th loss this season. So they get the Jazz Friday, a couple Indiana games, similar kind of opponents. I'll be interested to see how they look in those, and then a really tough back-to-back against Minnesota and Milwaukee next week. So schedule definitely ramping up for them too. We're going to talk some football here, and before we do that, playoffs are approaching. Just one more week until the postseason. This final week here with some teams resting or whatever it might be, good time to get your money line bet in and get $150 in bonus bets when you place a winning $5 money line bet at FanDuel.com/Boston. Our official sports wagering partners, of course, basketball, hockey, and a bunch of other sports going on right now as well. So go check out the app. It's easy to use. Get paid instantly when you win. Get those $150 bonus bets instantly. First-time users, of course, in mass, 21 plus, and the bonus bets are non-withdrawable and expire 7 days after receipt. $10 first deposit required. $5 pregame money line wager has to win to get your $150 in bonus bets. Check it out at FanDuel.com/Boston. Official sponsor of the Garden Report as well as Dome Theory here. So let's continue talking about the Ravens here, who clinched the top seed. And inevitably with that, I think there's going to be another MVP for Lamar Jackson, who's just been incredible after re-signing over the offseason. Still, to me, surprising how that whole situation went down, where he really didn't draw much interest around the league and then ultimately came to a deal with the Ravens there. Looking back on it, Vasquez, you have to think if you know, the rest of the league could change how they approach that now. Be a lot more interest in him and what he's able to do out there, because he really just doesn't have a stellar cast around him. You've had some receivers really step up there, and it's headlined by Zay Flowers, the rookie, but he's made a lot out of a little there.
I want to be very careful about saying that because that discredits the moves that were made in the offseason. I think
they're much better for sure, but
yeah, this wide receiver core is probably one of the best ever. I think, you know, I think Zay Flowers is going to be a top 10 receiver in this league one day. He's so fast. He is so shifty. OBJ is a good veteran presence, even if he's not the player that he once was.
Yeah, and you see him working with those other guys on the sideline during that last game there.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the focus, the fulcrum of Baltimore's offense is always going to be the running game. And that running game was dominant again this season. Gus Edwards has, I think, about 14 touchdowns right now. Lamar Jackson has himself a few handful. I think they broke the franchise record for rushing touchdowns in a season. So this offense is perfect for Lamar. It accentuates his strengths. It allows him to be the free offense that he wanted to play in. Shout out Todd Monken. And that defense, wow. Best in the league by far.
What do you think, Nate? Are they prohibitive favorites to win it all now?
Oh, for sure. 1,000%. That defense is probably the best defense in the league right now. The offense is also arguably the best defense, best offense in the league right now. I think that most of the credit should go to Todd Monken. For years, people were begging Greg Roman to evolve that offense, and he just never did for whatever reason. And now we're seeing it be evolved. We're seeing Lamar be able to show his talent from the pocket and stuff like that, while also being able to show what made us fall in love with Lamar Jackson in the first place, with his legs and stuff like that. So seeing all that being encompassed together, it's really, really satisfying. It's also nice to see Lamar Jackson make big plays in the pocket, get outside the pocket and throw the ball, hit the receiver on the hands, and the receiver catches the ball. That's so satisfying to watch, because before, he'll do what he has to do inside the pocket, he'll get out, and then he'll throw it like 60 yards, a dot, and then somehow it's dropped, and then nobody cares because it's not a completed play. So it's nice to see that as well. Last thing I do want to say before I hand it back over is I think everyone who is a fan of the teams that instantly came out to be like, we're not interested in Lamar Jackson, I think they should be questioning their fandom, because why are we being fans of teams that do not want to win? And that's really what it comes down to.
It's going to be interesting too here, depending on how it shakes out. You know, the Bills, they might sneak into the playoffs now. We'll see. You have that AFC South that's pretty weak. The Browns have come on pretty strong late, and if they're going to be there deep into the playoffs, it would be fun to see Flacco versus his old team. With Cleveland there, and it's a really good Cleveland team too. Those AFC North battles are always really tough. And then of course you get the Chiefs, who I don't think anyone really knows how to feel about after the regular season they had there. So there's a little bit of competition here. Miami's tough too. They've played some shootouts, but the Ravens just beat them. They beat the 49ers emphatically. So they've passed all the tests here in the regular season. Just going to be interesting to watch them be that top team to beat, because you know, for most of Lamar's career here, they've had some good teams, but they've been more of a fringe contender now. To see them shape up into this, you know, powerhouse this year and become that team that's going to be the one everyone watches each step of the way is really compelling to me, because, you know, the 49ers, they're awesome. They have a lot of talent all over the place, but, you know, outside of McCaffrey, don't really have that one star you're looking for. I guess it's the quarterback.
They have Debo Samuel. Debo Samuel's a really good player.
Yeah, I know. I'm more talking about the quarterback position here. And this has been a rough year for quarterbacks. Really has. So for Lamar to kind of run away with being the best at that position this year, I think is awesome, because obviously he's been doubted each step of the way. And he's only continued to grow and advance and prove himself. You mentioned the pocket play, Nate, especially. I mean, he's always been able to do that, but he's taken it to another level here. And I mean, he's earned his status in this league, and I think it's been awesome to see. He's a guy, all of us obviously saw him in college, coming into the league. I would have loved the Pats to have taken him there, but they go with Sony Michel the pick before. They're still in that Brady mode, so whatever. Maybe it doesn't go the same way. But the other thing I love about this team, Vasquez, and I know it's down the list, but if they do have that injury bug bite a little bit there at one point, he has to step out of a game halfway through. You like Huntley in that spot. And even looking long term, they add a guy in Malik Cunningham, who I love.
Oh my God.
Lamar Jackson being able to mentor there. I really do.
Yeah, no, I think this team is amazing. The Snoop Huntley, as much as I love Snoop, he blew the playoff game for us last year, man.
No, you want Lamar healthy. But my only point was they are in a better position than so many of the teams we've watched this year.
Yeah. He's one of the best backup quarterbacks in the league. And he, the way that he plays fits that system like a glove. So it's obviously not going to be Lamar if Lamar Jackson gets hurt, knocked on wood. But if in that case that he does, which again, Snoop Huntley is really, really good. He has the legs. He has the he just has the Lamar feel. And it's not going to be the same, but you don't have to change much in that offense for it to still be successful. And that's why I think that it's very important that they have Snoop Huntley. He might be one of the most important players on the team, even if he doesn't play, just because of the fact that you know you have that insurance just in case something happens to Lamar.
And they have a bye now, which is important.
Yes. Technically, they have two because Lamar isn't going to play this game.
Correct. Yes. But I mean, that's also, I think he might play a drive or two. What you don't want to happen is to be too far removed from playing.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. I feel like they should have made Lamar play a half. Just like get that repetition in of going to the game, starting the game, playing in the game for a little bit, and then like pull him out really quickly. Like kind of like preseason style. So that's if there's one thing that I would be nervous about going into the playoffs for the Ravens, it would be that the fact that they are resting their starters and there might be a little bit of rust. But aside from that, I don't really see any other reason to be concerned about them. I love the way that Isaiah Likely has stepped in for Mark Andrews, and I'm very excited to see what will become of Likely and Andrews when they're both able to be on the field together as well.
Absolutely.
Congrats as well to our fantasy champion, Phenote. We'll have to get him on here at some point, but in our first group chat edition of our fantasy football league, he comes out on top there. Not a great year for the old Mo Sharks.
but I'm ahead of the Marvelous Nine. So
it was quite a fantastic class. Not that I needed to
hang that banner. Not all last place. That banner.
All three of us here missed the playoffs, unfortunately. Even an expanded playoff at the last second, but we'll be back next year with some money on the line. But I want to talk a little bit about my Pats, who won't be going to the playoffs. It almost feels wrong that with the Ravens back at this level, they're not going to have the Pats there competing with them. Instead, it's the Pats competing for the number one pick. And, you know, they're not going to get number one, but top five pick at this point. Week 18, it's almost fitting because Bill Belichick's career started with his resignation from the Jets, and all he's done is beat the Jets ever since, and they've won every game since Obama, so they can keep that streak alive even though they're going to miss the playoffs here, even though I kind of feel like this is going to be Bill Belichick's last game as Patriots head coach. Could go out on a positive note here by beating the Jets one more time. Obviously, a lot of fans who want to see them tank and get a higher position won't love to see that. But my feeling all along is that no matter where you end up, as long as it's at the top there, you just got to make the right pick. It doesn't necessarily have to be a quarterback. You could always pick a quarterback later. But as far as Bill goes here, are you expecting this to be his last game, Vasquez, week 18?
I am not expecting this to be his last game. I think if we were to believe the reports that he is planning to meet with Kraft on the offensive and have a game plan, I think it is more likely that he will surrender roster control than fully leave the organization. I think he is too close to Don Shula's record. I think the Krafts want him to do so in a Patriots uniform. And I think regardless of the public opinion against him forcing Brady out, he's built enough, you know, status in this league to do things the way that he might want to.
How do you feel about that, Nate? Is that a good idea to keep him around, even if he's willing to sacrifice some power?
Oh, if he's willing to just be head coach, for sure. Well, it's a no-brainer. I mean, the issue has never been Bill Belichick, the coach. The issue has been Bill Belichick, the GM. And if you essentially fire Bill Belichick, the GM, and you keep the greatest head coach of all time, who says no to that?
I think I might. The tough part here is it's
a good thing you don't make the decisions, Bobby.
It sounds good in theory, I just think it's going to be difficult to work out. And obviously, they got to figure out who that GM will be if they're going to bring him in. Has to be someone Bill would work with if they're going to work together into the future here. But I think it's just a tough position to oversee a coach with this kind of cachet, as Vasquez said there, a guy who's made decisions his whole career here. I mean, he hasn't had anyone above him for over 20 years now. So all of a sudden, a guy's just going to come in who's making personnel decisions for him with no say. Like, it sounds good as an idea, but I just think after the last couple of years, he hasn't done the greatest job coaching the team. And obviously, it's headlined by the Matt Patricia thing a year ago and that disastrous decision. Seeing Matt get worse this year and having that go the wrong way and probably ending this offseason. I get the argument. You bring in a new quarterback. You get a fresh start next year, bring in some pieces, spend some money, and maybe you start going in the right direction again. But all I ask is for what? Like, just to feel good, just to see it end nicely with Bill here. Because I don't think by the time they're a great team again, it's going to be winding down for Bill anyway. So at this point, is he just here to kind of break that record and, you know, coach his last years out here and, you know, keep doing what he wants to do? That'd be great. Obviously, that's what you want to see with Brady. But they're in a really bad spot right now, and I think they're in a great position to start 100% fresh. And yes, I don't know if the next guy, and it seems like it's going to be Jerod Mayo if it is, if Bill does move on here. I don't know if that's a good option. I get your argument that there's a lot of uncertainty with that. But the position they're in right now isn't good at all. I mean, I can't even watch this team. They're so bad. They can't move the ball an inch.
I mean, it hurts when you have a stationary target as quarterback as well, which would be solved by, by two things. By first thing being Bill not being the GM anymore, and the second thing being that whatever GM the Pats have, he trades all his first round picks to the Chicago Bears for Caleb Williams.
For Caleb Williams, we want Justin Fields.
No.
Come on, now you're sticking with Fields after how
I've
started.
I've been with Fields the whole time. Vasquez, is that not true?
Unfortunately, Nate is right on this one.
I've been with Fields the whole time. The only valid argument I see for trading Fields is the fact that you get to restart the clock with another minimum QB contract. That's really the only valid reason. Besides that, and it's a very valid reason. Like, it's something that I'm still wrestling with in my head. Like, do I want the Bears to keep Fields? Do I want the Bears to trade him and like reset that that quarterback timeline? But overall, like from what we've seen with him, especially with him working with what DJ Moore and nothing, like it's like seeing that growth, seeing that progression. The defense is coming; it's starting to come along, but it's not really where it should be. Especially for a Bears defense, it's not where it should be. Seeing all that stuff, like I think that the bigger question is, do we keep the coach, Matt Eberflus? And I think the answer is no. I think we fire him and we get Eric B. and then we win some Super Bowls. I think that's what should happen. And draft like Marvin Harrison Jr.
Man, what'd you say? Let's see where he ends up.
No, I was saying it seems more likely that Eric B. is going to stay in Washington and be promoted.
Why?
Because they have, because Ron Rivera is not lasting another year under that regime, and I think
I mean nobody
a sound offensive mind.
Nobody's gonna last long under that regime. They have Sam Howell throwing like leading the league in interceptions. That's not Eric B. And the other thing too is I think that Eric B. I think it's the same situation as Lamar Jackson from the standpoint of it's clear that this guy impacts winning, and you guys are just like all you. NFL owners are just out on him for whatever stupid reason it is. Like, do you care about winning? We see what happened. We see how good the Kansas City Chiefs were with Eric B. We see how bad they are without him, with Matt Nagy calling the offense, which that's a whole other thing. And I could get into a Matt Nagy rant another time. But regardless, like, we see the difference. It's literally night and day between the Chiefs being this spectacular offense that can run these trick plays with carousels and stuff like that because they're that good. And to them now, you have Travis Kelce throwing his helmet on the sidelines. You have Patrick Mahomes getting ready to fight referees and stuff like that. Like, you can literally see it being night and day. So I just don't – if Eric B's only option is to stay in Washington, that's just a massive failure by the NFL because it's clear that this dude impacts winning. And because of that, specifically because of this year, I think that his stock should be higher than what it already should have been.
Well, if you do move on from the head coach in Chicago, how would you like to hire Bill Belichick?
I'm good. Thank you.
Oh, all right.
But for the reason that you said, like, it's the fact that he's starting to get up there in age. Like, if he's like 50, then sure, bring him. But like, what is he, like 65, 70 at this point? Like,
he's 72, 73. He's in.
Yeah, like it's clear that the sun is setting on the Bill Belichick book of the NFL, and it's been a wonderful book to watch. It's amazing, but at the same time, I think that he should be allowed to, if he's willing to take the lesser role of just being the coach, I think he should be able to.
But if he's not, finish his.
Oh yeah, if he's not able to do that, yeah, he's out.
Well, I think that's what's gonna happen. And next week's gonna be so interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's gonna be awkward at Foxborough this Sunday. It's gonna be snowing. It's gonna be Jets Pats. It's gonna be another toilet bowl. But you don't know. Everyone in that crowd's gonna be wondering: is he back? Is he gone? You know, do we give him a standing ovation here? Do we boo him off the field if they lose? They're not gonna do that. But I agree, Nate. I wish I could enjoy Sunday, and I'm gonna watch every snap of that game because I think this is it for him, and I really appreciate all he's given us here as fans over the years, and it's been a lot of great moments, but the time does come to an end, and I think the end is here. I don't think I can do this for another year here, and they got to figure out what the next direction is going to be here sooner rather than later. And what would be the most interesting landing spot for him, Vasquez, if he is done with the Pats here? Would it be Washington? Could it be Dallas if things go wrong there? Chargers?
I was just about to say that, Nate. Those Chargers are by far the most interesting spot for him. I think the biggest issue that Belichick has right now is that he doesn't have a quarterback, which again is a problem that he created himself. But you're talking about the Chargers, you're talking about Justin Herbert, who is universally regarded as a top 10 quarterback in this league, top 5 as a talent. You got offensive weapons there in Mike Williams, you got Keenan Allen, who is still performing at an elite level. Austin Eckler has been slowing down a bit, but they got the offense.
Austin Eckler is a Belichick guy. He would love to have that guy.
Absolutely. And the defense, I think, is like bottom 5 in the league. But they have the talent there.
They have stars.
So if anything, it actually helped them in that regard, being the best defensive mind in league history. They could easily be a 13-win team next year if he was coaching them. But the question is, would he also take the managerial duties? Because after they fired Telesco, they haven't hired a replacement.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a given with him at this point. Again, I just can't see him working for someone else. So they'd be giving him full control. They'd be giving him the bag. They'd have to, you know, sell out to have Belichick take this thing over. And the argument you make there, Vasquez, is if he is older, if he's really trying to go for one more ring like Brady did down in Tampa, that's a good situation to get it. Chicago's not ready. Dallas is ready, but who knows if that's going to open up. And then Washington is not ready. So right now, in terms of available jobs, it's definitely the Chargers. So that'd be interesting.
Dallas might be the only team that if they get Bill Belichick, I still won't take them seriously.
How about this? This one's fun. Buffalo.
No. No. Josh Why? Allen needs to focus on completing his passes and being a quarterback instead of a running back. That's what he needs to do. And I don't think Bill Belichick is going to fix that.
It's kind of hard to be a quarterback when your team isn't really doing too good.
No, they're doing. They have the weapons. I mean, Stephon Diggs hasn't seen a target in like the whole season.
I mean, he's also been complaining since before the season started
because he hasn't seen any targets. They got him to make Josh Allen better. He did that. And then Josh Allen stopped throwing the ball to him, or for whatever reason, he's not as big of a part of an offense as he was. And now they got worse. It's simple correlation.
I think that's more of an indictment on the head coach and Sean McDermott himself and the staff putting Josh Allen in positions to try to be Superman. Because you see the media is really big on him being a dual threat quarterback, him having as many rushing touchdowns as he has in the last 5 games. So I think he's trying to uphold that standard at the expense of his team.
I'm with Nate.
Did Josh Allen complete more than 50% of his passes last game?
I do not think so, but I know he has 40 touchdowns in counting.
Oh, nope. Dead on it. 50% against the Patriots.
Like,
50. This has been his completion percentage over since November 19th against the Jets. Actually, no, since November 13th.
I mean, Zappy completed more passes than him. That's never good.
57.7. 57.7, 62.5, 56.9, 54.8, 46.7, 71.4. That's against the Chargers, and then 50% against the Patriots.
I agree with you, Nate. I think he's,
that's
he's
inexcusable.
Too focused. He's too focused on the run game, and they've never had a run game there with him, which just blows my mind because they're good running backs everywhere across the league, and they can't figure it out. It's going to be bad. I think the coach is gone, and that would be a quicker move for Belichick than going across the country. And
yeah,
right in the Patriots' backyard.
I will say that it's impressive that they, if they win this game against the Dolphins, they'll be the 2 seed. And it's such a microcosm of their season. The fact that if they win this game, they're the 2 seed, and if they lose this game, they're not in the playoffs at all.
Well, I'm glad whoever wins that game, whoever's going deep into these playoffs, we're getting these garbage teams out of here, and the Pats are among them. So I'm very happy to see this season come to an end. There were a lot of bad teams out there, and they were as bad as anyone. It was just a nightmare season. So that's our football talk here. I do want to do, fortunately, another ugly one in Boston here. Baseball Minute. Give HelloFresh a try this winter. Don't want to go out in the cold. Don't want to go to the grocery store. Certainly don't want to go out to eat with the prices right now being what they are. HelloFresh is a great option. Laid out ingredients, instructions. Even if you don't love cooking, they make it easy. They make it fun, and they make it affordable, customizable as well. So it comes whenever you want to your front door, in a box, on ice. And you can customize what you're getting for your diet, for your preferences. The menu is constantly evolving as well. And they're throwing in free breakfast for life with every order when you go to HelloFresh.com/CLNSfree. Great sponsor. I've always loved using them. Very enjoyable experience with them, and some really fun recipes in there for whatever you like, fish, steak, chicken, hamburgers, all of that in there, as well as some vegetarian, vegan options too. So check it out, HelloFresh.com/CLNSfree. Oh, man. I was expecting more than this to start the Red Sox offseason. Lucas Giolito, the big splash for my Bo Sox. They had money to spend. They changed the GM. Sure, there's still time here, but we're like a month from spring training starting to get underway, at least the early portion of it. And this team hasn't done anything to substantially change their roster here. In fact, they took a big step back, I felt like, this week, trading Chris Sale to the Braves for, what's his name, Vaughn Grisham, Nate?
Second baseman. Vaughn Grisham.
So these are very Heim Bloom moves. And even our friend Taylor admitted Bloom didn't even want to move Sale. So this is almost an extreme version of some cost cutting here that we've seen over the last couple of years. We'll see with Grisham. Apparently he can hit. Apparently he's a really nice prospect for second base where they need some help here. And I get the argument that Sale has been hurt so much and pitched so poorly in so many games in recent years that getting off that contract, even though they're eating, I think, $17 million here, is a benefit, and you can just move on and try to get some other arms in here who are more reliable. But to me, Vasquez, watching this team the last couple of years, and I know what Taylor would say if he's here, he hasn't pitched. So I haven't even watched enough of Sale to say this, but when he did pitch, I felt like he was the only elite arm in this rotation who could reach the 8, 9, 10 strikeout mark and really, you know, show some elite stuff here. And whether he had a transition to the bullpen or just be that fourth, fifth starter who you're relying on a little less, he's better than Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock and Josh Winkowski and some of these options they might be leaning on the back end of the rotation here. This is just about money, Vasquez.
I'm sorry, Vasquez. Before you go, I just want to point out how I'm very proud of Bobby from going from Chris Sale was the only elite player on the Boston Red Sox to recognizing that he was the only elite arm on the Boston Red Sox. That's why I laughed. Yeah, Go ahead, Vasquez. I just had to point that out.
I'm glad we were on the same time with that.
When he came back against Detroit last year, and again, another wacky injury. I think he crashed his bike or he had a rib injury to start. He's just had the wackiest injuries. He came out and just struck out everybody. And that was the first time I was sitting there last year saying, wow, this is elite stuff. And yes, I get Devers is a great player. all the way down the line in that lineup to some really great players. But that was the first time you had someone step on the field and just take a game over for them last year. And he certainly had his bad starts too. But I've always loved this guy. And I guess part of this for me, Nate, is just that, you know, you saw him in Chicago. You saw the level he pitched at back then. He won this team a championship. I just always loved his game, and you still see shades of it. And it just kind of stinks it went the way it did.
I agree with you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, the best ability is availability. That's been said ad nauseum in all the sports. And this is very much the same situation. I think getting even 140 games out of Vaughn Grissom, who, again, is a very, very good second baseman, is better than potentially getting, what, 5 to 10 starts from Chris Sale. He might be elite in 3 of them. He might get hurt in the 4th. And realistically, even if he was playing on this team, are the Sox contenders, are they any closer to the World Series? No.
No, they need to make additions beyond him. And that's what kills me right now. No pitching additions at all. You lose an arm here. And Giolito, Nate. I mean, come on. I guess they did a Zoom introduction for him today. Like, he's some big addition. And I get it. Maybe he rekindles some of the good years he had there in Chicago. But this isn't solving their front-end pitching problems, even if he does have a little bit of a rejuvenated year here.
What good years? He had solid years. I mean, 3.41 in 2019, 3.48 in 2020.
What do you think of him? He pitched for your team. What do you think of him when he was there?
Not my team. You know what needs to happen for them to be my team. Anyway, regardless of that,
they were your team then.
When he's good, he's solid. When he's bad, he's bad. Like really, 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 really.
Allowed 40 home runs last year.
40 home runs last year. 20 of those home runs were on the White Sox.
That's bad.
I don't know. Like. His career is interesting because he started off being the worst pitcher in baseball. He reworked his form, and he became solid. And now it seems like he's kind of regressing. It kind of seems like batters are kind of figuring out that new form, and they're starting to knock it out the park when he throws it too. So I don't know. Like, how much did they give him? Like, I think they gave him like
Vasquez. What was the number? Right.
I believe it's 1 year, $18 million. But there's an option for 3 year at 58.
Yeah, that's an overpay to me. Especially an overpay to me, especially when you, I believe it was today, he was asked about his free agency market, and he was like, "It wasn't many people knocking on my door." So you paid $18 million for someone who,
that was unreal.
Maybe 5 teams in the league want, and it seems like he's on the decline when you look at his 2023. I understand that he was bouncing around and stuff like that, and also some of the franchises he played for. I mean, but he's been playing for a trash franchise the whole time. When he was on the White Sox last year, he had a 3.79 ERA. That's solid. When he went to the Angels, he had a 6.89 ERA, and he pitched about 6 games for them, and then he pitched 6 games for the Guardians, and that ERA, that super high ERA, somehow got bigger with a 7.04. So, I mean, I don't know why you guys are paying $18 million for this guy. He, like I said, when he's good, he's solid. When he's bad, he's terrible. So I guess I can look forward to the times when he's terrible and you're in the chat like, "Oh my God, I can't believe that we paid $18 million for him. Like, I'm done with this team." Like, I can't wait for that.
That's, you don't have to wait. I'm already pretty disgusted with this division.
Hey, question: how would you feel if the Sox signed Imanaga?
I'm fine with it. No, not super familiar, but I'll take any pitching they can get at this point.
Yeah, I believe right now they're expecting him to get 20 to 25 million a year. They were expecting him to sign maybe $100 million deal.
Was he the player from Cuba?
No, Shota Imanaga is on Team Japan. He's the second big pitcher behind Yamamoto, who ended up signing with the Dodgers.
No, and I was shocked they didn't make a stronger push at Yamamoto, because even for the big price tag, younger guy, I know Nate wanted to kick around his deal a little bit too, but that's really good value to me. And obviously it's a slam dunk what the Dodgers did there, given the other additions they've made over the last couple of years here, but he's on the younger side. He's not in his 30s like so many of these pitchers that reach free agency in the American side of things. So it's a better investment, even though it does go above $300 million there. you know how I feel about what the Dodgers are doing and what they're getting away with here, but that's a great addition. And I think he's going to pan out, but obviously Boston didn't feel strongly enough about that to really extend themselves for him here. And all I ask is, if you're not willing to do that, I mean, they were damn near close to losing Devers, as we know. And if took like booing at the Winter Classic and just berating the ownership group at that fan event a couple of years ago to finally get them to ink that deal. But like, you just can't, you can't compete not spending now. I know you can get to the playoffs and do the whole raise thing, but you're not going to compete for championships. And it's just, it's awful, you know, going to Fenway, paying the prices fans do, investing in the team like these fans have over the years. To see this, a salary dump and a garbage bin signing a pitcher, it's a joke. Like, I'm just so disgusted with this team right now. And I'll give them time. But, man, like, you had a lot of money coming into this offseason. There were big pieces. I didn't expect them to go out and get Ohtani, but I expected them to be competitive, and they really haven't been.
I agree. We need more big market teams to act like big market teams.
If Lindo was here, too, we tossed a link in the chat today that the Yankees haven't spent a cent either. And I know they went out and got Soto. But I mean, this isn't the Red Sox and Yankees we used to know.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees not willing to go up to 350 for Yamamoto, especially, like you said before, with his age, his youth, and what he could eventually develop into is just idiotic. That's not the Yankee way. That's not the way that the Yankees built their empire off of. And if they're expecting to win championships like this, it's not going to happen.
How about both these teams not once being again, in on Ohtani at all?
Well, the Red Sox, the Yankees weren't. I kind of suspected the Yankees wouldn't be in on Ohtani just for the sake of, you hear about the Anthony Rizzo and how they didn't take care of him, like, physically when he's playing with a concussion for 3 months and stuff like that. Like, I think that types of stuff, I think that kind of drives free agents away. I have to imagine, because again, like, you want a franchise that cares about you, that cares about your physicality and stuff like that, your athleticism, and especially your mind and stuff like that too, especially understanding how magnified the issue of CTE and concussions across all sports has become. And to see that a team is just playing around with someone's brain like that is just insanity to me. So I'm not really as shocked that the Yankees didn't really have that much leverage in the Ohtani situation.
If they did offer $700 million, I'm sure you could look away from that.
But even then, like, I'm not fully sure because, again...
No, I mean, the price just got so high on him, so I'm interested to see how that plays out. But
And to your point, like, if there's ever a team that should be able to afford that, it should be the Yankees.
Right.
So, I like, the Red Sox, big market team, I understand that they you guys love baseball over there, as I like baseball, as Vasquez loves baseball, I understand that. But if we're really talking about, like, the big market teams, like, Boston isn't really in the same conversation as the Yankees or the Dodgers.
I mean, for 20 years, my whole life growing up, they had stars. And I love Devers, and he's won a championship for this team, but he hasn't really resonated, unfortunately, because of some really bad years, and the city is one of its bigger stars. And beyond that, you lose bets over cheapness and just, you know, unable to come to an agreement there, whatever the reasons might have been. You lose Bogarts, which I really hated, and that kind of, you know, was the beginning of the end for Bloom for me. And then, again, you nearly lose Devers, too. You lose Sale here. Again, not a star, but one of the guys you've recognized on this team. It's tough. And like I've said, you know, I know you guys aren't up here in Boston, but a lot of people really have soured on this team to the point where they're not even paying attention to them anymore. They're not going to the ballpark. So I hate that because this is my team growing up. You know, I love the Pats, love the Celtics, but this was my team. And I don't know. I wish Taylor was here to walk me off the ledge a little bit with this group. I'll give them some more time. But baseball, it'll be here eventually. Just want to chime in on some frustrations here at the back end of the show. Good to have Nate Sperling here, as always. The Cap is awaiting its first album of the year. What do you think it's going to be, Nate? Is there anything scheduled that you're looking forward to?
Playboi Carti's teasing, 21 Savage's teasing, Metro Boomin said he's going to drop 3 albums this year. One of them is, I assume, is going to be with 21 Savage. The other one's going to be with Future, and you might be excited. I think the other one might be JID.
Yes, freestyle, I think he kicked off the new year with, which was really solid as always from him. Still maybe my top rapper going into 2024, but I'm excited for Kali Uchis as well, who is actually dropping next week after her great album last year. So I'm looking forward to her too. Anything on your end, Vasquez?
We got week 18 for the Ravens, and that's basically it, man. Living life. I definitely can't wait for that Metro 21 album. Heroes and Villains was masterful.
All right. He is Anthony Vasquez. Join us again here for the second time from New York. Thank you, Vasquez. Nate, as well, down in NYC. Enjoyed New Year's down there. Hope you guys had a happy New Year's and everybody else out there. More consistent episodes for sure. Group chat chiming in constantly here. I think you'll see some different combinations of hosts here too, and some interviews coming as well here on Dome Theory. So subscribe. Lots of episodes coming. Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and more. Quick shout out too for the network, SeatGeek. Still run this promo, I believe. $20 off your first order. Just use the code DREAMERSPRO when you head over there at SeatGeek. Great app. Everybody uses it. I've used it forever. Ratings on deals. Green's great. Red's bad. All kinds of sporting events, concerts, whatever you're looking for. $20 off your first purchase. Just use that code DREAMERSPRO. And that's our show for today. Dome Theory. I'm Bobby Manning. We'll see you on Celtics post game Friday for the Jazz game.